Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlatnik. Today, it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Al Bean. Hi, Al.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing excellent. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the podcast. And we met through the Collective Genius Mastermind. And we've been working together for a while, been friends, and kind of been looking into doing more business. So appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't say no for the world.
So just a quick introduction. You've been a prominent investor in the Detroit area. You're a CEO of Pioneer Homes, and you've been involved with over 2,000 real estate transactions, which is impressive. And so tell us a little bit about Al. Who's Al? Do you have family, kids, cats, dogs?
Cats. Yeah, so Al Bean, born and raised in Michigan, a little town called Macomb Township. Growing up, I'd say we were middle class. You know, we weren't poor, but we weren't, very wealthy. So I would say it's a comfortable upbringing. Mom and dad had a younger brother. Went to school, got decent grades, not great grades, but did the normal kid thing, right? You know, get out of high school, go to college, get a four-year degree. And things kind of changed for me once I got through college. I kind of got into a position where I learned what entrepreneurship was. I was in kind of the driver's seat of a painting business. It's a company called Student Painters. Really showed me the ins and outs of business. So at a very young age, 18 is when I started doing that. Really understood what being a business owner looked like. And it was a very good experience. So when I got done with that, I really decided that I'm going to be a business owner. And for some reason, when I was going through college, real estate always stuck out to me. So I graduated college in May of 2009. I moved home. And the famous story is that I was still living in my parents' basement for about 3 months. My dad kind of had that conversation with me like, dude, what are you doing? You got to do something with your life. So I was, I think, 20, 21 at the time. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to get into real estate. I ran into a buddy at a party and I asked him what he was doing. And he said, oh, I'm flipping houses. And it just, for some reason, struck a nerve. I was like, that's what I want to do. So that conversation with my father happened, I believe, in September. And I bought my first property, first fix and flip, in December of 2009. And that's kind of when things got started. And I always say I got very lucky with the timing of the market because, I mean, they say the very bottom was March of 2009. So I really got in at the very bottom, and things have just kind of been on the up and up since then. So that's kind of when the turnkey business kind of got going, which is where you're selling individual properties to other investors. And we were fortunate to link up with some pretty big buying groups. And at our peak, we're selling a couple hundred properties a year. So just been kind of riding that train now for almost a decade.
That's great. I appreciate the overview. It's a success story where you don't necessarily do what you go to college for, but you find yourself, find what you like. And it sounds like you discovered real estate and you came in at a good time when the market, it was hard to go wrong over the last 10 years. And certainly, I appreciate the turnkey range. It's it's still as relevant today as it was relevant years ago. It is certainly trading at a higher price now than before.
Right.
But so just let's talk a little bit about Detroit market for turnkeys. And where are you selling these properties today? I remember Detroit a few years back, maybe close to 10 years back when it was at the bottom of the market.
Yeah.
The properties for the cost of paying taxes on them, kind of in the rough neighborhoods.
Right.
So, I'm sure it's not the same today. So how has Detroit evolved over the last 10 years in the kind of turnkey range?
Yeah, I mean, to see where Detroit was 10 years ago and where it's come today, I mean, it's, people that haven't been here in 5 years. They come and we do a tour of the city. They're in disbelief as to what's going on down in you know, the downtown area, including myself. I mean, there's times I might not go downtown per se, like specific downtown, for 6, 8, 10 months, usually through the winter. There's not a lot going on down there with sports, at least. So, it's just unbelievable to see what has happened. And on the turnkey side, you know, over the last 3 to 5 years, our prices have ranged, and you know, there are different price points, different type of assets. Are you looking for vacant, needing work, or you want the full turnkey, you don't have to do anything? So our average prices have ranged probably between 40 and 60,000 over the last few years.
Is that completed property, or this is not before rehab?
Completed, you know, completed. A lot of times where maybe we were taking down existing portfolios from investors who've owned properties for 20, 30 years, maybe had a little hair on them. So they were looking to sell them at a discounted price. So some of these, yes, at 40 to, you know, lower end of 40K for turnkey. But, you know, we say some deferred maintenance is coming with that. But I'd say that the turnkey model in Detroit, it's getting compressed. I mean, the last couple of years, it's been tricky to offer the same value at that price point. What we found is the acquisition side of the business has not been followed by the sales side. So our AQ price is increasing, but the sale prices are not really keeping up. So, you know, that's kind of forced us to do a little bit or do things a little bit differently on the turnkey front. Another reason why we kind of shifted our business model the last year and a half, almost 2 years now, trying to get into the multifamily game. So yeah, I mean, we're still doing a lot of single family stuff, but the prices are definitely compressed, or the margins have been compressed significantly over the last few years.
Yeah, and I appreciate that view. It has been, I guess, margin compression issue in many markets. It has happened and is happening today all over the country. The acquisition costs before the rehabs have gotten up, and then the sales price has been hard to push it up because they work as a multiple of rent, kind of based on rent-to-value ratio, and it's been a little bit tough in many markets. So I certainly hear your pain.
Yes.
Let's just stay a little bit more on turnkey, and then we'll shift into the what's the land of future opportunities. Where are you going? Where do you see the opportunities? So quickly on a turnkey range, what's the $60,000 property rents for just today? I'm assuming it's, you know, it's done reasonably well. It's hopefully not too much deferred maintenance. I'm assuming if people buy that product, they got at least a few worry-free years. So what kind of rent does it generate typically today?
Yeah, so the $60,000, you know, that's like an average number. I think 60 nowadays is kind of on the lower end, and that's also Detroit proper. But if we're talking Detroit proper, that's not the suburbs. 60 grand is going to get anywhere from 800 to 900 in rent. You know, those are and we try to pass on a little bit of equity to our clients. So that $60,000 house may appraise for, you know, $70,000-$75,000. We really try to include some equity for them, but yeah, I mean, that's kind of the average. Our goal is, you know, minimum 800 rents, and you know, and the rents have also kind of kept up with, in my opinion, on the retail pricing. So let's say a house is at $75,000, the ARV or appraised value, I think the rents have increased steadily with that. So I think, yeah, $800 is probably going to be your minimum at that price point.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So, where do you see this is all going? Again, you've been doing this for a while, continue to do, and then we chatted in the past that you're looking to get into some more multifamily opportunities. But the question to you is this: you have an area of expertise. You've done well in it. You know that business, and now you're looking to branch out and to do multifamily. Multifamily is a beast of its own. It gets pretty competitive there too. In fact, the cap rates have been pretty low, and now with interest rates falling, they might continue to stay where they are. It's pretty hard to make a buck unless you get into some pretty significant value adds and significant renovations.
Right.
Any thoughts on this? How do you see yourself going into the multifamily market? And is that just heavy value adds? Is that specific marketing? How do you get into quality deals that make economic sense in a pretty competitive market?
Yeah. So, you know, I say that my experience in the single family world has really primed me and my company and my team for that multifamily transition because, you know, imagine doing 200 renovations, single family homes around maybe a 50 mile radius, right? So if we can manage that, and if we can take that skill set and move it into one complex, taking that economy of scale, taking advantage of it. And really the key thing that I take away from our experience in single family is we really have learned the construction business. So for me, the way to make a buck in multifamily is in this market, if you're looking for that higher IRR and you want a property that you can buy for $5 million and force the appreciation to be $8 to $10 million over a 5-year timeline, you have to be able to do that heavy lifting. And that means construction. That means understanding that side of the business. And a lot of investors don't really, in my opinion, don't realize that's how, or that's what this business is. Sometimes it's just as much a construction business as it is an investment business, because if you don't understand construction, you're going to be in trouble. If you're going to let a management company manage your construction, the costs are going to be a lot higher than they would be if you handle them in-house. And if you don't understand it, you won't even know if you're getting ripped off or not. So I think that skill set that we've really developed and learned and built a system around over the last 10 years is really going to be the difference maker on success or you know, getting more deals than the average company.
That's a great point. I so much agree with you on the being local and having experience in the crews to manage construction. I see too many people try to buy properties a few thousand miles away and then trying to manage those renovations remotely, and that's a recipe for failure. Too many people, and I've known, you could have a good project, but if you're dealing with heavy renovations, you have to be local. You have to live, sleep, kind of an eat the dog shit. Pardon me. I'm on the radio here.
It's true. Eat your own dog food, right?
Yeah, you have to be in the trenches fighting the battle, because a lot of heavy renovation is that. And if you can manage that, that differentiates success and failure in these heavy renovation projects. So that's actually a great point. And you're local. You're looking locally, which is important, instead of trying to look. You know, 1,000 miles away. So, and we chatted, I think you might even have some opportunities coming up in the near future. But they have to be significant value add, some kind of a fire burn down or some kind of big project. Otherwise, it's very hard to find, you know, market rents, market everything at a discount. That stuff just trades at a fair market value. And unless you have some real personal distress, somebody passed away or some kind of inheritance, people don't know the market, then they don't go to a broker. It's really hard to find a decent enough deal.
Yeah. We're actually looking at a 96 unit property now with some pretty significant fire damage, and people are afraid of it. You know, they don't see the opportunity. And because we've done firework, we've done all kinds of construction, to me, it's an opportunity. Other people see something scary and something, there's all kinds of, you know, call it a can of worms. And sure, that may be the case, but when you have professionals on your team that understand the business and they know how to handle a fire damaged property, that is what separates us from some of the competition in the market. Because some of these guys, they don't want to do that. They don't want to deal with the vacancy and maybe negative cash flow for 12 months. So that's something that, hey, look, in this market, it's competitive. It's, you know, call it a shark tank, if you will, but you have to do things like that to get that edge on your competition. So, and I'm not saying every deal has to be fire damage or severely run down. There's ways to find deals that are from sellers in distress, but they're not knocking at your door. You got to go out and get them.
Agreed. Yeah. It's, you're either doing good marketing or you're doing good renovations or both. Otherwise, the deals are not going to come to you for sure.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. So, what do you think in general? What's driving Detroit economy nowadays? So just again, we're likely going to hit recession in 2020, and it's always been known as automobile capital of the world. Right. I know a lot of it has been diversified, but is there still a lot of auto industry happening around Detroit? Is that what's driving the recovery? Because one of the observations that I've made, and I heard that we have an oversupply of new cars. The last few years, it's been selling really well, and yeah. Now there's a glut of vehicles, and they last longer and they run longer. And is the auto industry likely going to take some kind of a beating with the recession, or you think it's the city has now got enough of other things that even if the industry slows down as part of the economic recession, that industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a lot of weight on the auto industry. I think that will definitely have an impact, but I think we're more diversified than we were when this happened last time. I think, I think statistically, Detroit as a whole, actually the number one employer or number one industry is actually in the healthcare field. So, there's a lot of hospitals in that area, in that market, healthcare. So nurses, doctors, physicians, you name it. That's a big factor here. A lot of tech has moved here. Downtown has attracted some tech plays. I know Facebook, they opened a small shop down here. A lot of retail, I mean, like Nike, Under Armour, a lot of those companies have come downtown. So that's not, relatively speaking, that's a very small piece. But yeah, I mean, I think Detroit is definitely still tied into the auto industry. Is the diversification enough to offset a potential recession? I'm not sure. But I think they're in a much better position now than they were 10 years ago. I think if things get a little funky, they're a little bit safer. But to say that they're out of they're in the clear, I'm not sure. But yeah, I definitely think we're more diversified than we were last time this happened.
Yeah, that's great to hear. It's a lot of cities, especially downtown areas, have been going through some kind of modernization, technology oriented. Again, I don't know how friendly Detroit is to businesses. Taxes have been very, very friendly. A lot of businesses have been moving to Texas, and hearing that Detroit has turned more business friendly and some high tech companies are moving to Detroit, that's certainly great news. That it's showing promise of potential jobs outside of kind of manufacturing in the auto industry. And what do you think? Again, 10 years from now, just hypothetical question. What do you think? You want to be? Do you want to be heavily in multifamily, and do you want to be like the king of Detroit multifamily real estate, or just a hypothetical question? What do you think the opportunity is in Detroit? And you certainly are naturally progressing to multifamily because of your experience in single family,
right?
But it's a different beast. It's a game of it's a different game. It's a bigger boy game. And do you have the crews? That's another quick question. You have the capacity. Do you have enough people working for you in single family to move into multifamily?
Yeah. I mean, 2018, we did just over 200 houses, and about 85% of those we did renovations on. So,
is it all your crews or subcontractors, or I'm just curious how are you managing people? Because retaining good people is hard.
Yeah, no, it's just relationship with contractors. I mean, we've gone down that road with having our own crews, our own hourly guys, foremen, their own sites. And it's just a business that if you are not running it very, very tight, which, you may think you are, but you're really not. For us, we wanted to do that to maybe either save time and quality and the money, But when we started kind of breaking down the numbers and seeing it really wasn't saving us a ton of money or quality, that's when we just kind of went back and we're really just third party contractors, and we have some project managers on staff. But we found that it's actually easier to find quality construction companies to do these bigger jobs because there's more money to be paid, which means they have higher quality workers. So for me, the construction business in multifamily, at least for us, is easier than the single family properties just because the numbers are bigger and you can afford the higher quality and all that stuff. So, I think it's been a pretty, I guess, I don't want to say seamless, but it's been a smoother transition than one would think.
Gotcha. Yeah, I hear you. Certainly economy of scale and all depends how busy they are. I talk with some construction people and if you want to hire them now, they tell you, well, don't bother me for the next 3 months. Let's put you in the pipeline, you know, kind of 4 to 6 months down the road. Although going into a winter season, things get, you know, quite a bit better. Kind of hiring skilled construction workers because their work slows down somewhat.
Right. I agree.
Anyway, so let's quickly chat about all your experience in real estate and in business. Do you have kind of a good productivity tool or good advice, or is there a good methodology that you use to manage your rehabs, just kind of best practice? You have any kind of thoughts on the subject?
Yeah, so there's a lot of tools we use, but I think one of the biggest things that I could share is that if you are doing fix and flips, if you are buying multifamily real estate and doing construction and doing value add things, our software is BuilderTrend. We use BuilderTrend. That's a pretty in-depth tool, and we probably underutilize what it actually can do. But when it comes to the business, I think a lot of owners and investors, they have to understand that this is a construction business. Sometimes it's more construction than it is actually real estate. Yes, you have to pay attention to numbers, but I would say focus a lot more on the construction side than you are, because that is the difference, especially with this upcoming, you know, if there is a recession, who knows what's going to happen. But if you're not running a tight ship and you don't have your numbers dialed in and you're not organized and you're budgeting for 10 grand and it costs you 20, you're going to get destroyed. You're going to get slaughtered. I mean, those are the companies back in the 2008, 2009, that dip. Those are the companies that got wiped out. It was the companies that were running lean, mean, they were organized, they were efficient, they knew their numbers. That is what you have to do. And I just think if you're doing construction, you have to look at it like a construction business. Because if you don't, I mean, you know, this isn't a hobby. So you can't treat it like one. You have to treat it like a business. And to me, it starts with the construction. Every deal we've ever done that had any construction, our success and or failure came from the construction side of the deal, always.
Yeah, I appreciate the wisdom. That's a great point. That is so true. All the folks I spoke with and on the podcast and off the podcast, it's all about execution on the project plan. So if you build a plan, and just a couple of quick thoughts. Do you build a project plan and do you follow on progress daily, weekly? What works for you? Just curious, what's the best methodology to make sure that the project is running on budget, on time, with quality? How do you drive that forward?
Yeah, so project managers, they are required every 48 hours to, it's called a daily log. BuilderTrend has a daily log. So that means they're on their job site. There's a minimum number of photos they have to upload, a detailed note section talking about status, any problems, anything they need assistance with from the office. And then once a week we have, we call it our pipeline meeting, which is we sit down, we kind of go through numbers. We talk about finished projects. How do we do on numbers? How do we do on timeline? That is a weekly occurrence. But yeah, I think the key is to make sure that your project managers are staying on top of their job. And the only way to do that successfully is to document everything, because 6 months is gone in the blink of an eye, or 3 months is gone in the blink of an eye. And if you're not documenting every step of the way and every conversation, and you go to a property and the lockbox is missing, or there's a window cracked. There, it's just impossible for somebody to remember that. So we just really harp on the fact that they have to document everything, because especially in a big, you know, let's say an apartment that has, you know, 50 properties being renovated, you have to document that because you'll never remember it. So for us, it's the weekly pipeline meeting, but there's that daily requirement for your stops. You have a minimum of stops every day, and then you're required to be at every one of your projects minimum every 48 hours.
That's another great point. I happened to interview another gentleman who's, I think, podcast coming a little bit ahead of our recording. I recorded a month ago, and he's very successful projects, and it's exactly the same message. His project managers go on projects daily. You say 48 hours, he says, every day. And yeah. That's the key to success. You're measuring and you're monitoring progress daily. If you don't monitor, if you don't measure, the work progress slows down quite a bit. So that's a great thing.
I agree. You know, I totally agree. And then when it comes to contractors, I have always found that trying to find the cheapest guys, you always end up spending more money. And it may be cliche to say this on the podcast. I'm sure you have a lot of listeners that know that, but you get stuck in that position sometimes as the owner. I mean, I've done a ton of these things, and I find myself sometimes saying, well, hey, how can we shave cost here? How can you save cost there? And you know, the old saying, every time you try to save a buck, it ends up costing you two. And it could not be further from the truth, or it couldn't be more true. I mean, every time we try to save money, it ends up costing us. So, I'd much rather pay more money for a quality contractor because A, they normally hit their timeline. That's one of the biggest things, but they always turn in a quality product. There's not go backs, especially houses that are getting tenants. They move in and within 48 hours, you're getting calls about issues. So I would spend the money where it matters. And sometimes, you know, functionality of a property, if we're talking rental properties, functionality is sometimes more important than the actual aesthetics. I mean, having both obviously is crucial, but if you're trying to cut costs, do not cut costs on the mechanical side of the home, the functionality, plumbing, electrical, any of that, because another thing that could kill you is maintenance. If you have people moving in and maintenance happens immediately, turnover is going to be higher. You know, your turnover can also kill you. So just those are things that we pay attention to. And every time we do a final walkthrough, everything has to work. You know, there's a 100-point checklist, most of which are functional aspects of the property. So that's one thing we really focus on.
Yeah, I appreciate the sharing. Most contractors who are trying to get the property to the market don't pay attention to, as long as it's marketable, it's more important to them. But the reality is the functional stuff is more important than the pretty look, because you're ultimately selling somebody an investment that has to work well and keep the renter happy instead of, you know, putting some extra, you know, lipstick on a pig. Let me put it this way.
Exactly.
So, makes sense. We're coming up on our targeted time. How would folks find you if they wanted to chat with you, talk about buying something in Detroit, or is there a good way to get a hold of Al?
You can check out the website and contact us through that. It's pioneerhomesus.com. Or feel free to email me directly. It's al@pioneerhomesus.com. And that's for our Detroit, turnkey business.
Thank you kindly. I appreciate your wisdom and your sharing and your faith in Detroit and helping the city continue to grow. It's certainly been revived. Now it's going to the next phase of its development.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate having me, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.